Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Ash Millman.
What? Who are you? I can't hear you.
I know, we're not joined by my voice. We did the news before, me and Josh, which might be on the channel by now. But yeah, my voice is somewhere on Saturday night. I left it somewhere. I'll retrieve it at some point.
I just thought you were trying to do like a David Hayter impression or something like that.
I wish this was what my David Hayter voice was. This is closer to that guy from Chernobyl that can barely talk. Yeah, I'm the health inspector, but also joined by Josh Brown.
Hiya.
So yes, I just wanted to talk about Mass Effect, and I'm not going to let the fact that I haven't got any bass get in the way of it. So... I want to talk about the history of Mass Effect. I want to talk about how much we love Mass Effect. And then we're going to get onto the future of the franchise because it's too damn lovable to leave behind. So my opening thing is, what either of you guys' earliest memories with the franchise? Did you come on board with the first one or did you leap in a bit later on?
Well, I mentioned this the other day that I actually started with Mass Effect 2 and then tried to go back to... I know. I started Mass Effect 2, tried to go back to Mass Effect 1, but found it a bit too difficult to adjust to the changing controls because I thought Mass Effect 2 was so good.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I tried to go back to Mass Effect 1, I was like... Ugh. What's all this? Mm-hmm. So then when played Mass Effect 3 when that came out and then was like, oh, I want the whole experience, went back and played 1, 2 and then 3 again.
Right, cool.
But I really enjoyed that way of doing it. It sounds a bit backwards, but I felt like I got the most out of it that way because I played 2, which really like one of the first games that got me like into gaming as much as I am
now. It's weird going back to 1 as well because the controls are so strange and just the feel of it so off, and the back button is throw grenades.
Yeah, but I mean that grenade is good, man. Like little disc that you
I love the disc grenade. Yeah, give me that in every single game.
I think 2 is a good one to jump on because I think it's a very confident step up, and it's almost a self-contained story. There are references to the wider saga, but I think you can just get in, have a good time with the new companions, do this semi-isolated story, and then whoa, I'm into this universe now. Yeah. I want to play
is
the
that
next
what you
game.
Did as well?
No, I was there from the beginning. Good I actually man. Remember in a potentially an official Xbox magazine or an official PlayStation magazine when I was like quite young. Cause, I mean, it was 2007 when the first one came out.
When you were only born in 2004?
Yes, I was 3 years old. And I was already reading, the reading age of a 12-year-old.
That's why we hired you, Josh.
No, I remember reading about it and like without even seeing any footage, just screenshots and the way the developers talked about how you're going to have, you know, you're going to captain the ship, you're going to be able to explore so many different worlds. I remember one of the big selling points for me was it's going to be 24 hours long. And at the time, I was thinking, that is such a long game. That's going to take you a whole day to complete.
I had the exact same thing in terms of looking forward to it because the thing that used to get me, and it's like it became such a big deal at the time, but we kind of take it for granted now, is the conversation system.
Yes.
Because it was like you can have actual conversations with people in real time, you can plan your next response, and just having that fluidity to an interaction with an NPC is something that I don't know, like Mass Effect really got the ball rolling on. Like I think that most RPGs obviously they nail it these days. But just that, I remember just fantasizing the idea that I can go anywhere on my ship and I can just talk to an alien and I can talk to it.
That's all I
want to do. My whole thing with Mass Effect was just I'm a huge sci-fi nerd anyway, so it was just that idea of giving full agency, having your own ship, and Keith David was always going to be
Keith David Anderson is awesome in that game. Everyone is awesome in that game. I must have played it, the original, like so many times. One of my most replayed games, because I used to get it and I used to trade a lot of games in, but I'd always end up going back and buying Mass Effect 1. Like I'd trade other games in to get it because I traded it in initially because I thought I was done.
That's a quick wider thing. How many saves have you guys got? Have you got your master save when you went back over and did it again? Or did you start?
I did it again.
Right.
But I always make the same choices as a thing. I'm one of those people who's like, I go and play it again to be like, oh yeah, I'll make different choices. I'll do for different things. But I'm like so committed to the way that I play it. I'm like, no, but I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't. I've got to romance the Drell. I have to.
I would punch the guy out the window.
Yeah.
I'm the exact same, weirdly enough. I always... every single time I say I'm going to do a negative renegade run, I'm just going to be an absolute bastard all the way through.
Are you a paragon?
And then I'm paragon because I just can't bring myself always renegade. Ass. Are you actually? That makes a lot of sense.
Just
that,
killing every single person in your way.
I just love it. Honestly, I'm paragon to my crew, renegade. I can't think of a good rhyme for this.
No, you can't bring that together. But
renegade in the streets, paragon in the sheets.
Yes, good. It's definitely the mass. Ass effect. The ash effect has kicked in.
The ass effect.
I can't bring that back around, but I do like trying to sort of walk the line between the two, because I remember when Mass Effect 2, when they brought in the random sort of different trigger things that you could do, and it was like, push this button and you don't know what's going to happen. But like the renegade ones were always like, I need to know what he's doing, especially if I'm nutting one of the random Krogans in the face.
But it's so good. It's literally just boshing the news reporter around the face and be like, shut up and get
it. How much
one.
Of a meme did just punching a journalist in the face become?
It was a bit of a thing
For three games. I also did what point did you sort of fall in love with the series? Was it immediate, or was it one of those things where you sort of, it's an encapsulative thing? Because I remember falling in love with it beforehand and then just being like, this is exactly what I want. And it was just that idea of agency in that world.
Yeah, for me it was, because I remember thinking, as excited as I was, I thought the original Mass Effect, even at the time, I was thinking like, oh, is this starting off a little bit slow? The stuff in Eden Prime is quite cool, but I was just wondering where it was going to go. I like the way it sets up the story, but at the time it just wasn't what I expected. And then once you get, you know, make more decisions, you have to choose between Ashley and Caden. When you meet, I think it's Sovereign for the first time, and you actually talk to the Reaper, I just thought that is such a cool sci-fi moment, not just in this game, just in like, is in my entire gaming life until that point. I hadn't really experienced anything like that, so foreboding and full of dread and full of mythology. I just thought, I need to know what these Reapers are and what they're going to do, and I need to stop them somehow. And I like that.
It's his voice too.
It feels so overwhelming. Yeah, it's just such an impactful, resonant moment. I thought it was that moment where I just thought, yeah, we're into something.
It all kind of clicks. What was your thing in two? Because you come in a bit different point.
Literally, because you come in two and then you just die, don't you? And then like get taken to Cerberus and
got that
back
opening
together.
As your first like introduction to the whole franchise is brilliant.
Exactly. Because that was my first thing. I was absolutely enamored from the first bit. So I was like, oh my god, I'm not dead. Oh my god. And then like they build you back together and you like customize it completely. I am a big nerd for character customization things. Same. So being able to do anything and everything, and then it play into the game and how you've like built your person stuff. That was really exciting to me back in the day. I was like, wow,
because for me, like the fact that they did that intro, which like it's such a gut punch of an intro, you lose everybody, and because you'd spent like, I don't know, how long is the first game? Like 30, 40 hours?
Yeah, if you like do everything.
Yeah, if you make a point of like, you know, like checking out every single NPC, and then to rip all of them away from you and then have the whole elusive man thing, and it's Martin Sheen and whatever. Like there was something about, for me, like I said, like falling in love in the original one, but two I think is the high point of the whole trilogy.
Oh, it's so good.
We can quickly talk about like, yeah, which one do we think's the best? Are we all two fans?
Two.
Good. We can kind of pivot that against three, because I know we can do a whole separate podcast on why three isn't that bad.
Yeah,
you guys have both expressed that to me before.
Yeah, I think the ending overshadows a lot of what three does well, because although it does make some contentious changes in my mind, like switching to only two dialogue choices instead of three, I think sacrifices a lot of player expression in that game. And I think you can see that the game was rushed out effectively. Like they've tried to condense a finale to this saga into like a short development time, which I think does damage it. And you see that through kind of like fetch quests and stuff. But when that thing is firing on all cylinders and it's really nailing those story beats and those conclusions to arcs that started in the first game, I just think it's like spectacular. The stuff with like Tally and the stuff with like the Genophage and stuff, everything like that.
The
whole Solus thing. That's the thing. I mean, carrying like, there's not many other games that let you carry a save across that long of game time. Like I can't think of many other franchises where you stick with the same set of characters the whole way through, or the same protagonist the whole way through. I don't know if it's just a risk on the developer side where they just, because I remember the whole push at the start of Mass Effect 3 on EA's part was, this is the perfect time to jump in. I'm like, no, it's not. It's the end of the trilogy. You're going to get so much more out of it if you have all the preamble beforehand. Yeah. I don't know if that was the same thing with you, because you've always defended Mass Effect 3. Did you have a good old time?
I think the Mass Effect, again, I've said it a million times, Mass Effect 3 is a
perfect
game.
This is the time to do it, Ash.
I've said this before and I'll say it again, it's not about the end of Mass Effect 3, because everyone gets caught up on the end of Mass Effect 3, but the whole game is an ending in itself, and everything that it offers is an end to all of the different story threads that you've done through 1, 2 and 3, and the way that it ties them all up, it's like, it's beautiful, it's a beautiful game, it's really touching, and the way that it like approaches all of your independent characters and the way that they have grown and changed and how they've grown and changed with you. you and have their encapsulating arcs like sorted out. I just think that everything is so deftly done for that area that just to slam the whole game based on the very ending moment of, because the pillars are different colours or whatever, I just think is dumb, because I get it being frustrating. I really understand it being frustrating and it coming down to like people expected to be able to craft this whole different ending, but its vagueness and its openness and its way that it does kind of boil down to the same thing across it's how the narrative has to work. It's a linear story. You are Shepard and you've made your own Shepard, but Shepard is still this entity that has carried all the games, and that game has to have its own structure that you reach. And I think that the way that it did end was fine for me. I still cried at the ending. I still thought it was really nice. It didn't like enrage me or anything, but that's just a different opinion, isn't it?
That is supremely well put, and like I think we should maybe do another separate podcast on Mass Effect 3, because there's a lot to pick apart. Like I have a bunch of problems with like the overall structure of that game, like like opening the game on Earth being destroyed made me think that it was anathema to the idea of an open RPG, because I was like, well, I only need to save Earth. Why would I be going collecting data from some random NPC? There's so much plot drive that it kind of clashed. But yeah, we can do a whole separate podcast on that, and I think that was the best defense of Mass Effect 3 since 2012 when it came out. But yeah, I also want to mention, like, just narratively, I love the thing, this might be the thing that I kind of fell in love with overall, is that I can't think of many sci-fi franchises that really put humans on the back foot. I love the idea that like humanity as a species is new to the cosmos, and like we have to prove ourselves as a species, which is a unifying thing to bring everyone together. And I just like love that. I don't know if like the psychology of that or the philosophy of that ever like appealed to you guys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that shines through in the first game, especially when you're just trying to kind of break out of the council, like get recognized.
Like you're the first human spectre.
And I like the sort of baggage that we don't get to see in the history of like you were kind of the bad guys at one point. You were these upstarts just breaking your way into like space for the first time and stepping on everyone's toes and getting into fights and just that, then like, you are obviously that you're just kind of like viewed upon very negatively and you have to kind of break that stigma. I thought that was such a cool and unique drive that I hadn't seen in a sci-fi game before, really.
Well, it's like you look at like the First Contact War and it's like the Turians got in touch and I think we fired the first shot.
I think we did.
Which is the most human thing we could possibly do, like something outside, like,
oh my god, it's an alien.
And it's like I love that as a just even as an opening sort of like background comment on like humanity's approach to outsiders or whatever. And then I like that you sort of have to have those conversations with different races and you see how they have been embraced and how they sort of handle with the council races, and just as a narrative setup. Like I think for me it's always been my favorite sci-fi franchise, and I think it's probably because of something like that.
No, I totally agree. Like the humans being dumbasses, it's just realistic, isn't it? Like it's just what we would be like.
A little bit, a little bit. I also have
I was gonna say, it's just impressive how when you are coming into a first game like this, how confident it is to set up a world that has such rich and complex mythology that doesn't feel overwhelming, but every single part of it works. Like especially in Mass Effect 1, there is nothing lore-wise that I think falls flat or feels undercooked or underdeveloped. Everything seems so fleshed out to the point where you just want to soak it all in. You just want to like discover every single thing you can and read all the codexes and have those conversations that the system is sort of set up to encourage you to do.
Did you guys do the thing where you just sit down and put the codex on and just sit and listen to like a whole bunch of different
I can read everything.
I love the thing because they changed the way that like guns work in Mass Effect 2, because they started taking ammo instead of like the little, I forget what you call the filament of metal that was melted in Mass Effect 1 to make bullets, but whatever. I love the fact that they even wrote a specific codex entry about how the guns change. And I was like, that level of care, like give me the hardest sci-fi fantasy ever and I want like a whole team of creatives to have thought every nth degree thing out. It's just that level of care that like exemplifies why Mass Effect matters and like is kind of like ageless. I think that BioWare have moved away from that. Like I don't feel like there's that level of depth, because we can segue into Andromeda. I think like it's weird with Andromeda, because I remember me and Jules once filmed a 45 minute discussion where me and him just debated it and the camera ate the footage, so we never got to put it out. But at the time, I think because I was loving Mass Effect so much, I was trying to defend it more than it like clearly allowed, and based on like some of the animations and then reading the Kotaku report about how much went wrong and everything. But just, I guess, like initial, because your reaction was like, oh God, Andromeda. And mine totally is too. But where are we at on Andromeda now?
It's more, oh God, the conversation of Andromeda, because I definitely sit in the camp where I've defended it a lot more than it deserves as well. But that's because, I don't know, it's not... As a sci-fi game, I think it's fine. As a Mass Effect game, it's sorely disappointing. Yeah. That's the difference. I think it's fine. I don't think it... it's that bad, and it was entertaining enough. I did everything. I did all of the different side quests, right, everything I could. Like, I was one of the people who committed all of my time to it and then took a break from gaming for like 2 months. I can't do anymore.
We might need to do a whole list on that, because Days Gone,
I was going to say, this is my Days Gone. This is exactly what happened.
Oh God, video games that made us give up being gamers.
Just for a little bit.
It's like there's something about that sort of contrast in the way BioWare designed their newer games. I sort of noticed it the most in Dragon Age Inquisition, where it's like, here's a massive play space, here's things to do, but they don't necessarily push you towards them very much. And I think, like, for Andromeda, like reading the Kotaku thing about what the game was meant to be, they apparently sort of stumbled upon the same sort of tech that No Man's Sky then went with, where they were going to generate like so many different planets and you would go from place to place. And that in itself, the exploration would be the drive.
Yeah.
But that doesn't come through in Andromeda because they crunched it to what, like 3 or 4 planets? There's not very many.
I think it's a bit more than that, but I could be wrong. I want to say eight, but that could be incorrect.
Oh. Some of them are quite small little hub worlds.
It's been wiped from my memory now. I remember the ice planet. And then just was like, get it out.
Yeah,
like,
I remember the ice planet. I remember thinking that looked pretty cool. But even then, they're sort of just like stock planets, like the ice planet, the one with the floating rocks. Like, it was very just like sci-fi 101. But I mean, consider how much time you put into it, there are things that you can highlight as good. Like the combat model's way better.
Definitely. Yeah. I think, well, for me, it was, I actually, again, I'm with Ash and I quite enjoyed Mass Effect 3. Even the ending didn't annoy me as much as it annoyed a lot of other people. So I was still like quite hyped for Andromeda. I thought it was going to be good. And then I played it. And for me, the first 10 hours or so were just a slog, and I didn't know what I was doing, because it's so unfocused and so disparate with its mechanics and its systems and its storytelling that I just didn't have a focus or anything to sort of gravitate to. Mm-hmm. So I was trying a bit of everything and not really finding a flow or a loop. And then after about 10 hours, it suddenly clicked that this isn't necessarily a Mass Effect game. Like you said, it's a decent sci-fi game where you are exploring new worlds, you're trying to make them hospitable, and you're engaging with the combat way more than you ever did in the other games. And I think that for me is where it started to shine, when you were just sort of, you know, attacking bases and defeating enemies out in the wild rather than looking for the focused story stuff, because sadly that wasn't there, but there was still a compelling enough game underneath all of that baggage to find. It's just, I hate it when people recommend me games and then they just say, oh, it gets good after 10 hours, it gets good after 20 hours.
I do that every day.
I know, and that's why
it's always me.
And that's why I don't play any of them, Scott. I feel like
Final Fantasy VII's really good.
A game should grip you in the opening hours, and it shouldn't take that long to get going. But for me, that's the one redeeming feature I did have about Andromeda, is that eventually I found something to enjoy.
I think as well with Andromeda, like, to talk about the positives for it, we can talk about this. Do you like the idea that, because they sort of found something in the past for the original trilogy and then picked at it. I like the idea that they said, like, you know, someone out there believed Shepard when he was talking about the Reapers. And what if, it was kind of heavily implied in Andromeda that it was between the Elusive Man and I think it was Garrus's dad, that were the two people that sort of managed to organize and do the whole arc system that went across to the Andromeda galaxy. But I like the idea of sort of picking like a plot point from the original trilogy and expanding it and then making the conscious effort to go to a new galaxy. Like, do you think that, I mean, I like that as a way to sort of tap into the original trilogy, but it kind of feels fresh. I just don't think they did enough with it.
I think it's cool, because I think before Andromeda came out, I know a lot of people wanted to explore the First Contact war and make it a prequel.
I was game for that.
Whereas I think this is kind of better, because it in theory you would have given them more freedom. I don't think they used that freedom or that scope to deliver anything unique. I think the biggest problem with Andromeda for me is just that wasted potential. You're going to a new galaxy and yet everything just feels the same as what we were doing in Mass Effect 1 to 3, and that for me is the biggest frustrating thing that I can't get over.
I absolutely agree with that, because the thing that sealed that shut was that they didn't even include all like the original races from all of the other games. Like the Quarians weren't there, the Hanar weren't there, the Drell weren't there, all these like different people that they could have brought in to make it feel like lush and varied, rather than just slapping the Angara down and being like, hey, another humanoid alien.
We have won.
That's the weirdest thing when you look back on it, that like, obviously you have like the Hanar, and I love what the hell do you call the big ape dudes that speak literally every time?
The Elcor.
I adore the Elcor. But I remember at the beginning of Andromeda, when I was still giving it the benefit of the doubt, obviously the facial animations broke a few days beforehand. But whatever. But narratively, I like the idea that everything goes wrong when they try and get to the Andromeda galaxy. So they arrive like bit by bit. Mm. And I kind of thought that was, in theory, like, could have been a way to address like different races and cultures coming back together again.
It could have.
But they didn't do it.
If they'd have drip-feed them in, if they'd have gone, oh, they're not here yet. And then the thing is, finding them and getting them on board, doing this, doing that, so they're actually properly there and integrated, and you can do things with them. I think after having Tali in the first three games, and then just disregard all the Quarians was
the most annoying thing for me was that at the end it ends on a teaser of, oh, they're finally coming. Yeah. So it's like, oh, great. So we get back to where we were in Mass Effect 1. We're back to the status quo after a new game in a new galaxy, which is getting teased for content and characters that we already know exist.
Yeah, and plus, like, on that front, like, the I remember when they did the whole documentary video about the new enemy type, and it was the Ket. I think they called the Ket.
Yeah.
And, like, because there was a leak, like, years beforehand that sort of confirmed they were going to be in it, and then they showed it. And I remember just looking at the actual design of them. It was like, oh, here's some rock men.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah. And I was just kind of like, even then I wasn't even invested. I mean, I can kind of tell why they fell back on the old school stuff, because their new stuff didn't really have much of a hook.
But
the thing is, the new stuff, again, this is where it like kind of differs, as if it were a sci-fi game on its own, if Mass Effect wasn't the navel slapped on it, it would be good. But because they took all of the old ancient robot race thing and then integrated into this again. So it was the same narrative beat. It's the Protheans, isn't it, in this one? That's like the old.
Oh, no, it's not the Protheans.
What is the
2016 was so long ago, but was... still that BioWare template of an ancient race.
Yeah,
it's always the
Someone's
same.
Someone's got to know the name of them.
The Ket were the dudes that were that we were dealing with in the present, and then there was like two or three other ancient
like
races.
The Reapers and the Collectors and that sort of thing again, where it was like, oh, okay, there's this whole new race of people that are then protecting the whole underground alien android stuff, and all the ruins having these different bits and bobs. But yeah, I don't know. It felt like it was taking the template, scribbling it out again, and it would have worked well if they'd have just invested a bit more into fleshing out into something different, but it just felt far too similar.
So we can kind of pivot into like the final sort of chunk, which is like the future of it. What do you want them, if you want them to take anything from Andromeda at all, or like what do you think went wrong? Like for me, reading the Kotaku thing, it seems like it is a problem with BioWare. Obviously Casey Hudson had left at that point, and they didn't necessarily have visionaries or like creative leads to sort of fall back on. But going forward, like, is there anything from Andromeda's approach that you would want to take? I like the idea of a new galaxy. Like, I would do that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what would jump at me straight away. I think going somewhere new and not... I think the first contact worlds would be really interesting, everything, going back in the past. They're kind of stuck because you can't go to the Milky Way unless you're very far in the past or very far in the future. And I think messing around with the Milky Way more is... God, you don't want to, like, crap on the memory that you've made of 1, 2, and 3.
more than you already have.
Yeah, and Andromeda's... as much as Andromeda wasn't what everyone wanted it to be, they've set up this base now that they can then improve upon. And then, like you say, all of the new aliens have arrived. If they go there, have a couple of hundred years in the future... And then say, okay, here's a new problem that's happening. You've got to find a new threat level from universe literally ending, though, is a thing. And it's kind of...
Yeah. I quickly mention as well, I forget the name of the dude. What was the main antagonist? He was called The Something, the main dude from Andromeda. Whatever he was called. I like his motivations and what he was doing. People in the comments will know. That dude, his whole thing was that he was experimenting on all the other races that we knew from the original games to try and just see what made them tick and see if he could breed some sort of perfect race or whatever. Again, I like all that sort of like cultural mix-up, race relation type stuff, all the different dissections of that, because we do that as fandoms anyway. Mm-hmm. We're going to pick apart the different driving motivations behind those like cultures and everything, so it kind of made sense to do like a meta thing with the villain, and I think that still made him menacing but more than just a like one dimensional thing. But then once you got past that one scene where you find out his motivations, he does just come, he literally turns into a mwahaha cackling evil dude. So yeah, I think for in terms of like a villain and an overarching force, would you dial it down, do you think,
I think
the world ending?
I think a lot of TV shows especially, I think, have a problem where they introduce a massive threat and then they just constantly try to one-up themselves. Supernatural, which Heroes I used to watch all the time, do that problem where they introduced the devil in the actual apocalypse and then had another 10 seasons and didn't really know what to do after that. And I don't think Mass Effect should do another universe-ending story, especially when these games at their very best have always been so character driven and been so personal. That is more than enough to sustain an entire narrative if you just have a personal driving force. And you can do still set in this wide open new galaxy. I think not necessarily doing an Andromeda 2, but continuing the foundation that was built with that game would be smart, because there was so much they could do that they just didn't capitalize on in the first games. And I do think you can do this exploratory kind of adventure title where you're going from planet to planet and making them hospitable, because for me that was the most exciting part of Andromeda. That's where the excitement came from, the fact that you were on uncharted lands and they couldn't be anything. It turns out they were just the regular old ice planets, but if you do a second one, you can really go all in on that idea. And if you have a clear focus and don't get wrangled by your own ambition, you can make those varied planets and you can make each one distinct and interesting and have their own history and lore for the player to explore.
I mean, like the stuff with that as well, because at the end of all those planets you would like push a button and it was completely environmentally terraformed, like just that. And I thought that would create so many all the wildlife would die, like just all these different things with like the storms.
That's just how it works. The button knows.
They're just fine. Yeah, the button can, I don't know, tend to those little geckos that are burning alive or whatever. And I think, but that would be another way for them to do sort of what it's like interfacing with like a whole new bunch of people who don't want you there, and maybe you need to try and convince them of something, or you're just not meant to be there. And you can make decisions within that, and maybe you should just leave some people alone.
I feel like the easiest thing for them to do for another narrative is to introduce like this sounds weird and dumb, but like a zombie thing, as in not as in everyone turns into zombies, but as in like a disease narrative is the easiest way to do like and they could have something that's like, oh my god, it's cross species, we don't know what to do with it, and you've got to research it and go to new planets and find different things like that, because it's not like the world ending and everyone exploding and like a threat from the sky, and you can do all the personal stories.
In a meta sense, you'd be putting Mass Effect back together, which is totally what they have been doing as well.
Well, that'd be kind of cool, because that also like leads into the idea that this is a brand new galaxy that we don't know. We're going into this hostile territory, and even like the diseases that we have no idea what they are. And it's a cool way to kind of dive into the lore in a way that drives the story and isn't just, oh, we've got to another galaxy and there's another big bad guy with rocks for
more rock men
and ass. You know, he's just trying to kill us because he doesn't like
us.
He needs to. The writers said
that works.
That he needs
that's
to
what
kill
he does. Do you think as well that they will be better off? Like, because that's the thing, that the Mass Effect IP is active, like N7 Day. Like November 7th every year, there's always something else that was said or that is said. Casey Hudson mentioned last year that because they had this whole video on N7 Day last year in 2018 about what does Mass Effect mean to you, and they went through all the different employees. And Casey Hudson's returned now. He was the creative director on the original games, or from two of them anyway. And he was asked, like, what does Mass Effect mean to you? And he said it means coming into the studio every day, dreaming about what the next Mass Effect game can be. And then also in that year was said, one of another BioWare representatives said that the IP certainly isn't dead. Mm-hmm. So they're very much aware of it. And I think that considering how much Anthem was this massive stumble, and even Dragon Age 4 is kind of being talked about as another live service game, Mass Effect is kind of an easy win if they do it right and they tease it right and whatever. But do you think with all that stuff in mind, they should wait? They should give it a nice, massive long window before they come back again?
I don't know. I think it was 2016 was Andromeda, wasn't it? Yep. So I think I would be happy with it in the next couple of years, but it's not going to come out in the next couple of years because of Dragon Age 4 and all the other stuff. So I'm happy to wait for it. And I think that giving it some breathing room and cooling off time is definitely a good idea. But like, all I ever think about is Elder Scrolls 6 and how long it's been since Skyrim. So I like, if it's leaving that sort of time between them, then you just get like, give it
me. There's another thing as well. It's I don't know if it's in vogue, but like a lot of different franchises are just doing the soft reboot thing. Like Modern Warfare is just called Modern Warfare again. We've got Tomb Raider, we've got Doom. Like, do you think that if they just give it, I don't know, say 10 years, that they come back in 2025 or something and it's just called Mass Effect?
Ooh.
Would that be a way to completely reset the board?
I think they could. I can imagine, even though I'm not convinced on the idea, if that happened, and imagine you're at E3 or something and it goes dark, it's this new space game, it looks familiar, it's not quite what you look familiar, but you're not quite sure how, and then it pops up with just the words Mass Effect. That would pop me silly, right? That
the boys would be popped.
The boys would be popped.
But then, if you did like the Modern Warfare comparison, like, do we then do like a whole new approach of the Shepard story and the one savior and the Reapers or whatever? Because then they're still kind of stuck with the BioWare formula. Or do they just do a whole new space game and it's like, it's a spiritual sequel?
No more Shepard. Right. Don't crap on the Shepard legacy. Like, Shepard's done her time. She's like, I think that's a whole fantastic story, and it's a trilogy, mm-hmm. and it's a tight little narrative on its own. If you're gonna have her or him or whatever mm-hmm. in it, then it should be in reference, like with Andromeda, where you can find like Liara's tapes and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, Shepard said this.
One thing, I think I put this in a video ages ago, but a potential that how I would have done it, how I would have like done like a future Mass Effect, is I would have had a crew of people who, like, some of them believed Shepard's warning, some of them didn't, and I would have had this kind of meta conversation with the fans through the new characters, mm-hmm. as they're journeying towards the next galaxy. Mm-hmm. You could have literally had agency in that group conversation based on what your save was. Maybe mm-hmm. you could have across or something, and then someone could have said, oh well, Shepard did this, I thought he was right, I thought he was wrong, or they were right or they were wrong, and you could have addressed like, well, you know, I heard there was a Star Child, I heard there was this and that. they could have kind of got more in, like, either they need to face it head on or maybe they do just make like a clean break. But I wonder if just BioWare's legacy is maybe just better off doing a whole new space game, and they can just kind of put like pick and choose what they want from Mass Effect.
It's difficult because I think if they do another sci-fi game, it just inevitably gets drawn back to Mass Effect anyways. I think considering, even though it's the original trilogy is deeply tied to the Reaper War and stuff, I think there's just so much scope to do something completely new yet mm-hmm. still have it bear the Mass Effect name. There is no reason why it has to be about Shepard, why it has to be about the Reapers, mm-hmm. why it has to be about Andromeda. It's just, mm-hmm. it is an entire, there's galaxies upon galaxies upon galaxies worth of material to mine there. Mm-hmm. And you've got this history that you can then feed back into or tap into or even just reference to, ground it within this world. But Mass Effect doesn't necessarily should have to be one thing. That's the beauty of it. You could just do a random new space game, but then you can easily tie it into that mythology and still have it make sense and not have it feel like a complete departure from what we know.
I would still obviously love a future for Mass Effect. I'm just thinking of them making business decisions, like they're trying to pick the right year where they want to come back, and I think they do need to give it some breathing space. It seems like Andromeda is 3 years ago, but it doesn't feel that long ago.
It really doesn't. It still feels really fresh. I think what's going to happen, I think what inevitably will happen is the first Contact War, because that's all you ever see from like what fans want and stuff, which I think would be really interesting as well, and a lot tighter, more character driven thing, because you're going to be so head on with stuff, but then you lose out on all your other races you're establishing. So
I was kind of thinking of that, or like in the books, there's like the history of the Elusive Man, I think that was in one of the books, with like him being a soldier and how he became the way that he was, and like I don't know if retrospectively he's even that interesting fleshing out, but you kind of could do the foundations of Cerberus and like the humanity comes first and whatever.
The only issue for me, if you do that, even though there's so much that we don't know, it would have to, in the broad strokes, we all know where those characters end up or where those storylines end up.
That's my fundamental problem with every prequel.
Exactly. So does that limit, especially when you're in such a like RPG character-based, choice-based franchise, does that limit the freedom you give players in that sense. And, you can obviously micromanage things. You can alter things and change things on a micro level, but mm-hmm. at a macro level, you know vaguely where the story's going to go.
Let's talk about... Oh, go on.
A really good thing I read earlier in is another article was about the conflict between the Drell and the Hanar, because it's never actually fleshed out properly and you only meet like three Drell in the whole game that actually have proper names.
Yes, isn't the Hanar the dude that he calls a big stupid jellyfish?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
Because they have proper problems and stuff, so you could have something that kind of addresses all of these tensions in that sort of area, which would be really bizarre and out there, and the different, again, different races, different planets, different things, different species you can go and explore. I think that would be another interesting way to go, even if it's just like, okay, the humans and the Turians, the Drell and the Hanar.
Yeah.
Find all the different conflicting planets and have like someone who's the, like the Pathfinder, where it's like you're finding all the new things, but it's like a top secret government mission, so we've known about space for much longer than we said. Like, if that's the way that they have to do it, like then they
that can't. Would all, because I think it's, I always love in sci-fi when you it's a big mirror that you can hold up to humanity and humanity's philosophy and everything else. So like same with like the zombie genre, when it's done well, they go, who's the real monsters?
Consumerism.
Yeah, exactly. But like in sci-fi, there's more stuff you can do in terms of, like you said, like race relations, race wars, and things like that. And like, obviously, like the go-to narrative point is like, oh God, we feel like that way too, and like, we can learn something from the way that these other creatures are and whatever. And so I would like something like that. Speaking of that too, what do you think about multiple playable races, or is the crux of it humanity's approach to the cosmos?
Well, that, for me, that depends on what is happening. Because I think it would have made sense in Andromeda, even though like the humans are leading that sort of like push to a new galaxy. I think the fact that they're not alone, they're actually helped by a bunch of other people, would have made it easier to then be a different race or a different like species of alien. But I think if you go back, I think the, like we said earlier, the focus on humanity is so rich and so like unique that I think it would be a bit of a waste to kind of dilute that. Because the problem with, if you have a bunch of different species, then you have to just kind of like dilute the plot a little bit. It can't be quite as focused because you have to account for everyone's decisions. Whereas if you just limit it to being human, say in the First Contact War, then you get to properly dive into that, or like the writers do anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Like I like the idea of like just philosophically, like just being, because I think it unites us. Like it's like you bring everybody together, you have a really good character creator, and it's like, okay, all of humanity as is just to like a bunch of all different alien races are just, they're all just looking at us as one little group, and you kind of flesh out from there.
I think I much prefer just playing as a human and doing all this for thing, but I think you could introduce multiple playable races if you build on the foundation of everything we've had so far with 1, 2, and 3 and Andromeda, go to a new galaxy and it's everyone in it for themselves exploring, because we've had so much build up of the lore of these races that that's the point that you could introduce it. But you'd need it like the Argonians and Khajiit sort of thing. Like you need a real refined like selection that you pick for it. Otherwise, you could be an Asari. I think that would work.
I want to be a Krogan.
Yeah, no, but there's not many that it would like work properly with. Is the only thing.
Like, I think, an Elcor.
And exactly, like it's just gonna be really weird, isn't it? But I think I think Asari's the closest one that you could get to, the most reachable one. And a game all about Asari stuff would be really interesting.
Because you could open a game on a completely different planet, and then you hear about this new race entering the cosmos, and it's humans, but you get to do the other side of it, which is like something in like Metal Gear 2 when you play as Raiden first or whatever. That might be like a way to sort of flesh it out in a more natural way.
I don't know. It feels icky still, though. I think the thing is, like with Mass Effect, as much as we like to think of it as an open world game, it isn't. It's a linear story. It's like all these different things that tie together. It's the side missions, but it's not an open world in the same sense that other games are. I don't think, anyway.
No, I know what you mean.
Because the story is so tight and it is so like, okay, this is the beats that we're going to hit. Like people might die or drop out or different things, but you're always going to have the same like narrative unfolding. And to try and throw in open world aspects like playable races will just manipulate the way that it actually plays.
Just have one race and you stick with them the whole way.
Yeah, exactly. Humanity. So like that works.
Or a Drell.
Yeah.
A nice little assassin Drell.
That would be good, but I think this... I think these things work as like... Playable DLC chapters would be a much better way of doing that. I think having if they make a new game, wait the 10 years, have the big human-led story where it does all the same things we've seen in Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, Andromeda, pull all the good things that we like, have a new narrative, fix it all up, and then have playable race chapters as DLC. I think that would be a really good way of
it. For those, because those signature elements, like the more they went away from that stuff that you were describing, like the core of it is what Andromeda was more of, and that was just felt like the most disconnected thing ever. Basically, don't do a Mass Effect MMO.
Don't do
a world of Mass Effect.
I think if you do stick it to, whether it's humanity or whether it's someone else, if you focus it in on one race, I think that helps you explore the companions and your squadmates better as well. I think because, especially in the first game, you've got Ashley, who's a big old space racist. then maybe you wouldn't have. Yeah,
stop it, Ash.
Yes, Ash. Oddly enough, also the person on this podcast who keeps saying we only want humanity be the focus of the game.
It's like she's in the room.
How is that working? Oh my God. But you do get those like added
complexities.
No one misses Caden.
No one misses Caden. No one misses Caden.
No.
What I'm saying is,
I meant in real life.
If you do stick it,
yes.
2-1 race,
yeah.
Then you can have an option to flesh out the companions in a really interesting way by refracting them through that specific race and their relationship to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man. Go on.
I think it's incredibly interesting. I think it would be a fantastic thing to see. Now I've been called a space racer. I think it would be fantastic. I think it would be an interesting thing to see, but I think at the core of Mass Effect, it is our relationship with sci-fi mm-hmm. and space and exploration and how we would deal with it. And that's what makes it so personable and how we connect with it so well is because it is us in space. It's like, oh my God, okay, it's all of us doing dumbass human things
that's
all the
thing.
Time.
That, personally, I'd love that too. I'll also be a giant space racist. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that I want. I want to be humanity in a whole bunch of different scenarios mm-hmm. to learn more about ourselves by reflecting off a whole bunch of different cultures and alien races
yeah.
and ways of living and thinking that we wouldn't even have thought of. Like that's for me, that's the core of sci-fi when it's done well. So yeah, you guys let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching the video version, or come find us on social media if you're listening on any audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Ash Milman.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.